Episode 5 of By Our Own Hands. I lay in bed for a long time, unable to fall asleep. I thought of Mrs. O'Donnell. Mrs. O'Donnell's shoes were solid and had heavy heels. They were similar to the kind of shoes one wears for a treble jig. She had a purposeful walk, and when she walked, her shoes made a distinct clipped sound. The shoes outside of our door had been almost silent as the presence moved away from the door. They were soft-soled shoes or even slippers. Mrs. O'Donnell could have been wearing soft-soled shoes, but the shoes she wore when I met her were likely her only shoes. I knew that she probably wasn't wearing slippers. Few people in our class would waste money on slippers, shoes worn only with your night clothes. Only the wealthy did such things. The rest of us would go without shoes, if only in our night clothes. Most of us removed our shoes to walk the turfy region so common in this land. This was done to preserve our shoes, because shoes, even the poorest ones, were always a considerable expense. It dawned on me that the person standing outside our door was not Mrs. O'Donnell. Mrs. O'Donnell's room and the room I shared with Mother were fairly removed from the other rooms. If she hadn't been outside our door, then who was? I found the situation odd and unnerving. I pondered these details until I fell back asleep. When I woke again, Mother was already awake. She had changed into the clothes she was given when she was hired at Belgrove House. She was pinning her long hair tightly so that she could place her cap onto her head. I scrambled out of bed. "Hurry, Aoife, we are already late for breakfast," she said. I relieved myself in a chamber pot. Mother looked at me impatiently. I finished and began to hurry about gathering my clothes from the day before. "You are not going to wash?" Mother asked. I went to the water basin and quickly splashed water onto my face and chest. Mother handed me a towel. I had never before felt self-conscious about bathing and dressing in front of Mother, but that morning I found myself hurrying to dress. I kept looking in the direction of the door. I expected someone to open it and see me in a state of partial undress. Mother noticed and smiled. She walked towards the door. "It doesn't have a lock," I said. Mother examined the door. She looked surprised, and a fleeting look of despair crossed her face. She walked to my bed and sat on the edge of it. "I've heard of such things. At Belgrove House, the servants' quarters had locks, but one of the maids told me that some of the big houses do not allow their servants to have locks on their doors," she said. I knew better than to ask her why this was so. Even at my young age, I knew that some of the quality people considered dignity and privacy to be luxuries that one must afford as one must afford a decent pair of shoes. We could afford such luxuries no more than we could afford bed slippers or to go walking through boggy land on a cold day with our shoes strapped to our feet. I thought of this as I put on my own shoes, heavy and sturdy boots that my mother had purchased for me months ago. It had taken a considerable amount of time for me to be able to easily walk and run with my boots. Mother had purposely made sure to buy boots that were far too large for my feet so that I could grow into them. I knew that I had recently grown because the ample room was not nearly as ample. I hadn't said anything to Mother about this because she would only worry. I finished getting dressed. I grabbed a comb and began to untangle my hair. Mother walked over to me and took the comb from my hand. She deftly moved the comb through my hair. She finished and turned me about. "Aoife, you will behave yourself while we are here. Do you hear me?" she asked. She didn't look directly at me. Instead, she smoothed my hair and seemed to fix her eyes near my face, but not on my face. "Yes, Ma, that is what Mr. Adair told me," I said. She stopped and looked directly at me. "When did you speak to Mr. Adair?" she asked, a note of irritation in her voice. I hesitated before answering her. yesterday when Mrs. O'Donnell and I were, I began, but Mother interrupted me. Yes, I see, she said, her voice trailing. Mother, I asked, uncertain of why she was irritated and distracted. I suddenly thought of the shadow under the door. A bad feeling crept over me, but I could not understand why it did. Mother smoothed my hair again and recovered herself. And what else did Mr. Adair have to say? She asked. He said that I could have treats from Mrs. Barry if I promised to be good, I said, with a faint smile. She nodded. And he asked after you, Ma, I added, with some hesitation. She nodded again, and once again she looked distracted. Her hands fell away from my head. She looked away before speaking again. We are late. Come along. I followed Mother as we made our way out of the room. She looked about her in both directions. I grabbed her hand and tugged her in the right direction. I know the way. Mrs. O'Donnell showed me, I said. We walked along until we reached the kitchen, and I hurried inside with Mother. I was greeted with the same wonderful aromas as the day before. I could hear laughter and talking coming from the servants' dining area. When we reached it, a woman almost walked into us as she hurried out of the small enclave and into the kitchen. She was an older woman with white hair. Her face was both haggard and kind. She was extremely thin, even thinner than Mrs. Barry. She stopped abruptly. Despite her age, she was nimble on her feet. "Excuse me, and hello to both of you. You must be Mrs. Dorian," she said with a warm smile, eyeing Mother. Mother smiled shyly and nodded. "Yes, I am," Mother said. The kindly thin lady took Mother's hand and shook it. She fixed her blue eyes on me, and her smile broadened. I heard her rough gray dress rustle as she shook Mother's hand. "I am Aoife," I said. "I am Miss Boyce, but everyone calls me Bridie," she said. I knew immediately that I would like her. I learned later that she was the scullery maid and did some of the hardest work to be done in that big house. She had been there for many years, and all agreed that she would die with her boots on. Mother nervously extended her hand and shook Mrs. Boyce's hand. "It is a pleasure to meet you, Bridie," she said in a faint voice. Her smile was as faint as her voice. Soon, two young women emerged from the enclave. We all moved to make room for them. They too stopped when they saw Mother. Mother was striking in her beauty and had a delicate look to her that was almost fragile. She blushed when they looked at her. The two young women were obviously sisters. They could have been identical twins if not for the fact that one had raven black hair and the other had light brown hair. They could not have been more than 20 years of age. Their shared features were lovely. Each wore a simple maid's uniform. They were also both plump. I wondered if I too would become as plump as they were if I helped myself to enough of Mrs. Barry's scones. They must have been confident in their good looks because they did not give Mother the envious evil eye. Instead, they gave her smiles and greetings that were as warm as Miss Boyce's had been. Miss Boyce quickly excused herself as the young ladies moved closer towards Mother. Before walking away, Miss Boyce placed a hand on Mother's arm. "If you need anything, you just need to ask," she said. "Thank you, Bridie," Mother said. The young ladies began to speak at the same time. I almost laughed. The one with the black hair extended her hand to Mother. "I am Kate McDermott, and this is my sister Mary," she said, motioning towards her sister. Mother shook her hand and then shook the hand quickly offered to her by Mary. "It is a pleasure to meet the two of you," Mother said. I could see that she was uncomfortable. She always was when she had to meet new people. "Are you two twins?" I asked. "Aoife, please," Mother said in a low voice. Kate and Mary just laughed. "No, my dear, Kate is 1 year older than myself," Mary said, beaming at me. I knew that I would like them too. I was relieved that the most difficult person I had met thus far was Mrs. Barry, and she had offered me treats. "I am Aoife," I said. "I saw you yesterday with Mrs. O'Donnell," Mary said. At the sound of her name, Mrs. O'Donnell emerged from the enclave. "Girls, you will have plenty of time later to chat with Mrs. Dorian. Let me put some food in her," Mrs. O'Donnell said. Both Kate and Mary laughed again. "Mrs. O'Donnell, we were just introducing ourselves," Kate said. "Run along now. I have to feed these two before it's time for a midday meal," Mrs. O'Donnell said with a tight smile. I wondered why she was tense. Then I assumed that we were very late. "We will have a nice chat later," Kate said before she and her sister walked away. Mrs. O'Donnell ushered us into the dining area. The only person seated at the table was Old Man Seamus. He quickly stood up when we entered. He was old even then. "This is Seamus. He does a bit of everything around here," Mrs. O'Donnell said. He gave a courteous nod and left the room. As he did so, I heard him mumble under his breath, "Good day." I watched him leave. He gave me a faint smile and winked before he left the room. I was certain that I would like him too. "Where is Mrs. Barry?" I asked. "Oh, she is still serving the Reverend's family this morning," Mrs. O'Donnell said. I wondered if our late arrival meant that Mrs. O'Donnell had to take on tasks that were normally reserved for Mrs. Barry. I blushed at the thought of it. Mrs. O'Donnell seated both of us and started to clear away plates that were on the table. She left the room. I looked at Mother and saw that she was still uncomfortable. I sat quietly. Soon, Mrs. O'Donnell returned with tea. "I'm sorry I didn't wake the two of you earlier. I was told not to disturb yourselves," she said. I looked at Mother, who did not speak. She simply sipped the tea placed in front of her. "I will bring you both something to eat in just a few minutes," she added. Mother suddenly looked up. "Can I help you?" she asked. "Mother is a wonderful cook," I added. Mrs. O'Donnell smiled and shook her head. "If you are such a good cook, Mrs. Barry will be mighty jealous if she finds you in her kitchen doing a better job preparing food than she can," she said. I started to laugh and then put my hand over my mouth. Mother glared at me, but her expression soon softened when Mrs. O'Donnell began to chuckle. "We wouldn't want that," Mother said. Mrs. O'Donnell left the room. I knew that she would want to make certain that we ate a full breakfast after our long journey. She would not be returning in a few minutes. I took a sip of my tea. I stole a glance at Mother. Mother caught my eye. "Mrs. Barry is kind, but not as easy to get on with as Mrs. O'Donnell," I said. I wondered if what I had said was too bold, but Mother didn't correct me. She raised her eyebrows and eyed me for a moment. "I see," she said. I was surprised to hear footsteps behind me. I knew that Mrs. O'Donnell couldn't possibly have finished preparing our breakfast. I turned around and saw a man approaching me. He was older than Father had been, and even older than Mr. Adair. He was slender, but not slight. He was finely dressed. His face looked stern, but once he saw me staring at him, his expression softened. He had pale skin and even attractive features with dark eyes. He walked into our dining enclave. I could see that he was a gentleman. I could also see that he was displeased with something. I wondered if he was displeased with us. The reason for his displeasure was his task. I would not understand why his task was so unpleasant until much later. "Good morning. I am Reverend Henry Matterin," he said. Mother placed her teacup down. She did not look directly at him. He let his eyes linger on her, but not in a way that some men did. His expression was that of a disapproving father. He then looked at me again. "Hello, sir. I am Aoife," I said in a very quiet voice. I hoped that my small voice would be the proper, courteous tone to use with Reverend Matterin. It must have been because he smiled warmly at me. "Hello, Aoife. I am very pleased to meet you," he said. He then looked back at Mother. His smile disappeared. She kept her eyes cast down as she spoke. "Hello, Reverend. I am pleased to meet you." She smiled for a moment, and then her smile faded. His gaze did not leave her. I watched this exchange with some confusion, and then I realized that he was not angry. Instead, he was concerned, very concerned. I had been the reverend in this parish for a number of years. Prior to my arrival, the previous reverend lived here with his family. Mother nodded, but she did not look up at him. The reverend sighed and continued. It seems that they had a rather difficult child. The child needed constant care. He stepped further away from us with his hands behind his back. Mother looked up at him with some confusion. I too wondered why he was telling us about the previous reverend's family. The governess of the house had an attic room to herself. It was a good-sized room and provided her with more space than she required. It was decided that the best remedy for the difficult situation with the child was to divide the governess's attic room into two separate small rooms. The governess occupied one and the child occupied the other. This allowed the governess to always keep an eye on the child, he said. Mother and I exchanged looks. Reverend Matteran turned around and looked directly at Mother before he continued. Mr. Adair has made a special request. I thought of Mr. Adair's shouting and antics. I wondered if any request from Mr. Adair was actually a request. I doubted it. He would like for those two rooms to be occupied by Aoife and a young lad that works in the stables. I believe his name is Sean Moore, he said. Reverend Matteran continued to look at Mother with a look of concern that was now tinged with disapproval. His expression included something else, too. Expectation. I realized that he was gauging Mother's reaction. I didn't understand this, but I also wasn't too concerned. I was far more concerned with the revelation I had just heard. Sean's name was Moore. He wasn't Mr. O'Dowling's boy. I wondered if he was an orphan or a relation of Mr. O'Dowling. I was also excited about the prospect of having my own room, especially if Sean would have his own room right next to mine. I glanced from Reverend Matteran to Mother. My excitement quickly faded to complete confusion when I looked at Mother. She had gone completely pale. She was silent and still as a corpse. Mrs. Dorian, Reverend Matteran said with a questioning tone. Reverend Matteran glanced at me. Mother did too. Then she lowered her head and nodded. She wore the expression of a resigned prisoner who had just been read a terrible sentence of punishment. Perhaps we can speak on this matter again, he asked in a softer tone. No, Mother said without looking at him. Please see to Mr. Adair's request. Her voice was almost inaudible. Reverend Matteran stared at her for some time before he turned and left. I did not comprehend the significance of their exchange. How could I? I was also surprised that he had said nothing in parting. I would understand later that by his silence he had said plenty in parting. Later that day, I was in the stables with Sean, helping him brush one of the horses, when Mr. Adair himself entered. He motioned for us to follow him. Sean and I immediately complied. Mr. Adair walked ahead of us by many paces and occasionally turned around to order us to hurry. His tone was one of irritation, but his grin gave away the fact that it was mock irritation. Come on now, we don't have all day, he hollered. Each time he made a command for us to hurry and follow him, he would turn around and grin again. Sean and I struggled to keep up. We were soon giggling. We followed Mr. Adair into a back entrance to the house. Within moments, we found ourselves climbing a staircase. On reaching the third flight of stairs, the stairs narrowed considerably. We reached the attic rooms. It was then that Mr. Adair finally stopped moving. We all stopped in front of a door. Mr. Adair entered the room and we followed. He was silent as he entered. The room was small but surprisingly airy and well lit by the small window. It was furnished with a bed, table, chair, and chest. A tiny mirror was near the table. The spread on the bed was thick, plush, and mauve-colored. It was worn, but I thought it looked luxurious. We walked towards a door on the opposite side of the room. It was directly opposite the doorway that we had just entered. We walked through that door and entered a second room. I immediately knew that it was to be mine. The bed was the same size as the other one, but it was covered by a thick peach-colored spread. There was a small doll near the foot of the bed. I immediately grabbed it. Mr. Adair chuckled. "Do you like her?" he asked. I looked at the doll. It had a hard porcelain face and dark curly hair. It had clear blue eyes that looked odd. It was wearing a flowery dress with petticoats and shoes. Despite the unnatural gaze of the doll, I thought she was beautiful. I looked up at Mr. Adair and enthusiastically nodded my head. "Yes, sir," I said. "Then she is yours," he said, smiling and patting my head. "Thank you, sir," I said. "Be certain to show your mother your new doll," he said. "Oh, I will," I said, beaming with a bright smile. Sean looked at me with exasperation. I could see that he did not appreciate dolls. I gave him a grin as I hugged her to me. I looked about the room and saw that it was somewhat larger than the first room. There was a large table that included a couple of small drawers. A chair was near the table. It was nicer and larger than the chair in the other room. The mirror adorning the wall was large, too. There was a chest at the foot of the bed and several baskets near the wall. There was an additional small table with a water basin. There was also a stove with a chimney. My room clearly was the nicer of the two rooms. Sean and I stood quietly waiting for Mr. Adair to speak. Neither of us could stop ourselves from smiling. I could see that Mr. Adair enjoyed the fact that we were so delighted. "These rooms will be for the two of you," he said. Sean was the first of us to speak. "Thank you, sir," he said. "I thank you too, sir," I said. Mr. Adair gave us a smile and then his gaze wandered to the stove. "You will have to open your door crack so that the warmth from the stove can heat Sean's room too," he said. He looked at me again and walked closer to me. "Aoife, you listen to me. Only Sean can light the stove. Do you hear me?" he asked. I nodded my agreement and started at the sound of another approaching behind me. I turned and saw that it was Reverend Matarin. "Hello, Reverend Sir," I said. "Hello, Aoife," he said. He patted the top of my head and glanced at Sean. "Young man," he said with a faint but kindly smile. "Hello, Reverend Sir," Sean said. "I believe the children are the same age. I'm sure they are equally capable of lighting a fire," Reverend Matarin said dryly. Mr. Adair's smile did not fade, but a look of irritation flickered across his eyes. He walked towards Sean and patted him on the top of the head. "This is a remarkable lad. He is wise beyond his years," he said. He then calmly walked out of the room without saying another word. Reverend Matarin watched him go. As if remembering something he had forgotten, he called after Mr. Adair. "The carriage will be around soon," he hollered. He returned his attention to Sean and me. "Mr. Adair and my family will be gone for a few days. You both will behave, I trust," he asked, raising an eyebrow. "Yes, Reverend Sir," we answered in unison. This pleased him, but I'm not sure if it convinced him. Two small children, who are the best of friends, suddenly find their rooms are next door to one another. He probably thought that we were bound to be restless and rowdy. I made a secret promise to myself that I would not disappoint this kind man. I knew that for reasons I could not understand, my mother had already disappointed him. I did not want to do the same. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a small sack. He handed it to me. The lad here may be in charge of lighting the stove, but you, my dear, can be in charge of doling out the candy, he said with a smile. Thank you, I said, taking the candy from him. I could smell the scent of lemons. He turned to Sean. That is how it should be, sir, Sean said. I held my breath and hoped that he wasn't being too coy. Reverend Mattern chuckled. One day you will make a woman a happy wife, he said. Reverend Mattern's smiles were genuine, but they were still tinged with worry and even a touch of sadness. He turned and walked towards the door. Good day, children. Old man Seamus will bring your things up after dinner, he said. We watched him leave. As soon as he did, we both leapt up and down. I hugged Sean. Can you believe our good fortune? I asked. Barely, just barely, he said, his eyes shining. He eyed my doll. I am glad that you have a doll of your own, he added. I was grateful that he wasn't teasing me, and even more grateful that he wasn't jealous.